From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we have a conversation with Dmitry Babich, journalist with the Russian news agency Sputnik. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow on Wednesday. Well, Dmitry, first of all, Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, and whatever else you celebrated. I hope you had a great holiday.
Thank you, Don, and Merry Christmas to you, too. We had Orthodox Christmas just 1 day ago, so you're not too late with your congratulations.
That's right. So it occurred to me, I was looking at this story in the Washington Post on Wednesday, I think. Another propaganda, you know, hit on China from the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeffrey Bezos, the same guy that owns Amazon, the richest guy in the world, some people say. And, you know, it was some more ridiculous stuff about gulags for Muslims in China and such. And so it occurred to me, if this were the U.S., rather than China, that were being targeted by, say, RT or Sputnik, which is what they've claimed for years now, there would be a cry, and then, you know, going through Congress, the issuance of sanctions that would certainly prohibit any American, or in the case of the U.S., any corporations that did any business with China from doing any business with Bezos. And I'm wondering, like, if China were to turn around and tell all of the people that it does business with around the world, if you do any business with Amazon, you're finished, how that would be received in the West, starting with in Wall Street, of course, but and what would happen with Bezos' stock, but also just generally, politically, how it would be received.
Well, I think that thinking persons around the world would receive it positively, because this is the only language that Bezos and people like him understand. I mean, they don't understand normal logic if you just show them that, guys, you know, you have been lying. Look, like, you know, this story with the, sound attacks against the American diplomats in Cuba. It turned out that these were insects, basically.
Right.
You know, these were crickets making their mating calls. And the Washington Post, which made a huge story out of it, did not apologize.
Right.
The same story with Kosovo, where the Washington Post was talking about 100,000 Albanians buried, you know, slaughtered and buried by Serbs. Mm. Of course, you know, if it had been true, it would be impossible to hide it, because there are only 2 million Kosovo Albanians. So if you kill 100,000 in just about every family,
right,
you would have someone killed.
That's 5% of the population.
And for their relatives, you know,
right,
until now and many, many more years
right,
longer. But of course, it was a lie. You know, these so-called burials were never discovered. There were some, I just followed this story. I think the last time there was something about it was around 2007, I think, in a British newspaper. They claimed that the Serbs hid it all under a parking lot somewhere near Belgrade. of course, it was never confirmed. And then they just let the story die down. Okay, so these people have been lying. And if you expose them, it's not going to affect them, because unfortunately they control 90% of the world's communications. So even if you expose them on 10% of the communications they don't control, they will keep getting their payments. They will keep paying for their mortgages, and
right,
Jeff Bezos will just spit at you, saying that you are living in the age of post-truth. You know, post-truth for him is when someone exposes him, you know, right?
Right.
So, indeed, only economic sanctions and, you know, real hits at the hits at the pocket, as we say in Russia, can impress such people. But again, this is one of the biggest problems of humanity now. The elites in big countries that can resist, globalism, that can resist outer liberalism, very dangerous new totalitarian ideology, country, big countries that can resist them, Russia and China. We have elites that have been planning for decades, you know, for decades, to be parts of the Western world. So for them, it's very difficult to, you know, to change their schedules, their life schedules, I would say, and reorient their policies towards hitting at people like Jeff Bezos instead of cooperating with them.
Yeah.
That's a huge problem. You know, the latest indications are about China trying to kind of appease the United States. You know, they're sending signals like, we're going to buy more of your products. You know, ZTE, the Chinese company, a company hit by U.S. sanctions, they're saying, okay, we're going to change the ownership structure of our company, which is basically illegal, you know. It's like, right. I will be telling you, unless you leave your home to someone whom I tell you, and unless you leave him all your money, you're going to be under my sanctions. You know, I'm going to prohibit people buying stuff from you. That would be, look very much like racket, you know. In the,
yeah,
in the
mafia. Main, that's it's a mafia style. Yeah,
the mafia style, you know. Yeah. Unless you change the ownership structure, means unless you give me your property, right, or if you give it to the people that I show you, you won't have any clients. I will be beating the people who will come to purchase anything at your place, right? So China, it looks like a huge part of the Chinese leadership, they still don't understand that they're dealing with ideology. They're thinking that they're dealing with some kind of a tough business people. And Trump looks exactly like that. So their thinking is very much like the thinking of the victims of racket. You know, we just pay them what they want. We will appease them. We can kind of ransom ourselves out from them. And that will be the end of it. No, it's not going to be the end of it, because unfortunately, this is the problem with Bezos. He is not only a businessman making money on human misfortunes. He is also a part of a huge ideological machine that wants to redistribute property around the world, that wants to remake the world.
Right.
This is the problem.
Well, the redistribution that they want.
Jeff Bezos is just an instrument, you know.
Right.
Some people compare ultra-liberalism, some people compare globalism to the communist ideology in its extremist forms. Well, there are some similarities, such as, for example, the desire to exploit women, you know, to make women part of the workforce. If you look at the modern Western narrative about fighting discrimination of women, if you look deeper into it, it's not about making women's lives easier. It's not about, for example, in the United States, it's not about baby care, making it more affordable, letting women sit with their babies. It's about exploiting women, you know, like it's about making them serve in the army under the service, the same terms as men. It's about exploiting them, making them work the same hours as men. It's not about liberating women at all. So there are some similarities, but there is a big difference, because communist ideology did not try to make rich people its allies. Very rarely, you know, the people like, you know, the so-called communist sympathizers, you know, Savva Morozov or others, very rarely they were engaged, you know, in the communist projects. Usually the idea was just to dispossess the rich people. And ultra-liberalism, it kind of separates pro-globalist businessmen from the anti-globalist ones. So if you are a pro-globalist businessman, if you are an ultra-liberal like Jeff Bezos, fine, you can be the richest person in the world. You can exploit people the way you want. But if you are suspected of being with the Russian government, with Putin, if you are suspected of being with the Chinese government and defending your country, you will be not only dispossessed, you may be arrested, you know, just like, you know, Man Van Jun was arrested in Canada,
right,
just like Oleg Deripaska was basically forced. He was forced to basically to leave his company. Again, this language, the senators demanded, the U.S. senators demanded that he change the ownership structure of his company. That is racket. You know, it's not the business of American senators. What is the ownership structure of a Russian company?
Right.
They should be dealing with their own problems.
Yeah.
But this is the huge... this is the huge danger that humanity faces now. We have a new radical totalitarian ideology which does not respect private property, which does not respect human privacy, which does not respect the right of the people to elect their leaders. I mean, with all of my disdain for Mr. Trump, he was elected by Americans. So when he says, I want to withdraw the U.S. forces from Syria, people expect the United States to do it because he expresses the will of the voters. But then, basically, this is what I told my American opponents at a recent show on CTGN. You know, I said that I didn't believe Americans would really withdraw from Syria. I told it to the face of Jim Walsh. An American scholar who kept saying that Trump would do it because he wants to do it. I told him Trump won't do it because Trump is not ruling the United States. The United States is not ruled by the elected president. It's ruled by a radical ideology which operates via the media, via the Washington establishment, via some courts, and of course via the Congress. So basically, these people and this ideology couldn't care less what the voters want. If they can deceive the voters into electing Miss Clinton, fine. You know, Mrs. Clinton was their woman; she would do everything fine in their own according to the rules of this ideology. If the voters elect Trump, to hell with the voters. To hell with their desires, with their frustrations. They're just what was the word that Mrs. Clinton called them? They're just a basket of deplorables.
Right.
So this is where the so-called bourgeois democracy ends. You know, under Hitler it ended when Hitler issued this so-called Gesetz zum Schutz von Volk und Staat. You know, the law protecting people and government. Right.
Right.
In the early Soviet Union, it ended when the Constituent Assembly was dissolved. In the United States, the bourgeois democracy ended when the person who was not an ultra-liberal was elected the president.
Right.
At that moment, the establishment, the media, the people who really hold power in the United States, they declared the war on Mr. Trump. Not so much on him personally, but they declared the war on the wrong choice of voters. And they have shown that voters actually do not have a say in the United States. Voters will be treated in the same way European voters were treated by the EU during the referendums, such as the Brexit, such as the referendum not allowing Ukraine to have an association with the EU. What the European bureaucrats did was they just ignore the results of a referendum if it is against their plans. And the voters are asked to try again, until they push the right button.
Yep.
And the same story with the United States. The totalitarian, ultra-liberal ideology, which is indeed holding power in the United States, they're basically sending the message to voters every hour, every minute. You've pushed the wrong button. It's not going to work simply because we don't want it. It's not going to work until you push the right button and you do what we want you to do. Then it will work.
This all sounds like so much mafia stuff. almost every gangster movie that I've ever seen has in it, the mob guys go to some honest business person and demand, I want to wet my beak. You know, they want to get ownership of the business and let you, who made a successful business, continue to run it for a smaller and smaller share of the pie over time. This is the same approach, essentially, that U.S. foreign policy takes to those resources around the world, corporate, natural, human, or otherwise, that they don't already own. This is the drive behind the aggression towards Russia and China. It's been the drive behind the aggression in Korea, the occupation of Japan that's, you know, been going on since 1945, the occupation of Europe that's been going on since 1945, the occupation of Latin America that's been going on since the early 19th century. It's that you guys have a lot of stuff, we want it, and so we're here, we're taking it. Sit down and shut up or we're going to kill you. And I mean, that's been the foreign policy of the United States since 1790, more or less. And yet, if you discuss it that way in you know, the public sphere, the establishment figures, who I guess have been explaining it away for a century or two, look at you like you're speaking another language. It's pretty remarkable that they're able to sustain this fiction up to this point, but it seems to be unraveling now.
Well, I agree with you and I disagree with you a little bit, because this is a very popular narrative in Russia now, basically encouraged by the government. And this is something that I object to. They say that the United States has always been bad and the UK has always been bad. So we have lived with them being bad for 300 years. And it's kind of lulling you into sleep. Okay, if we have been living with it for 300 years, we're going to live for 300 years more, God, right?
Right, I hear you.
We're not dead, you know, our parents were not dead. So in reality, I think the situation now is much worse.
I agree with that.
Than it was under the Cold War, worse than it was in the 19th century. The U.S. foreign policy, if you look at it, it was a combination of positive and negative moves. You know, you're right to condemn the fact that the United States did not leave Europe, you know, after the Soviet Union dissolved, basically disbanded the Warsaw Treaty Organization and the confrontation there ended.
Right.
I think it was terrible that basically Gorbachev was deceived by Baker, by George Bush the senior, by George Bush the junior, by Clinton, all these people. So you're right about that. But also I would not kind of discount the fact that the United States came to Europe in 1944, helping to defeat Hitler. We are grateful. I mean, the Russians who know history, we are grateful to the United States for coming to Europe in 1918, because if General Pershing had not landed in Europe in 1918, if Germany had won the war, and there was a huge chance of that happening, because the French and the British were simply, they were squeezed towards La Manche, you know, they were squeezed hopelessly, they were hopelessly close to the English Channel during the German advancement in 1918.
Yeah.
Then the Brest Treaty would hold and Crimea would be in the German sphere of influence, not since 2014, in the 90s when it became a part of pro-Western Ukraine. But it would be the German sphere of interest since 1918, you know, and Crimea is a Russian, basically a Russian territory, soaked in blood and very precious to us. And it would be a tragedy starting 100 years earlier, right? So in that sense, the United States, its foreign policy, it's not, I would not call it all black. You know, it was a combination of black and white.
Yes.
And now what's going on now is indeed very dangerous and tragic, because it's almost completely black. It's an unholy alliance of ultra-liberals and extremist nationalists operating against big states. I mean, look. The United States and the European Union support the regime which is ruling Ukraine now. On the surface of it, there is absolutely no ideological ground for that, because Ukraine is ruled by crazy nationalists. You know, the people who pretend they don't understand Russian, even though 95% of the wards in Russia and Ukrainian are the same.
Right.
It's ruled by the people who are now basically destroying the historic Ukrainian Orthodox Church, forcing the priests to call themselves Russian priests, which is just like saying that you are a foreign agent, you know, in the United States in 1940, right? Saying that you are a Japanese priest operating in the United States. So it's, if you look at it from an ideological point of view, it's absurd. It can't be. But you have that alliance. Why? Because the ultra-liberal ideology, we now see that it has a very dangerous element in it. It is capable of allying itself to extremist nationalists who operate against the countries which the globalists, which the ultra-liberals see as their rivals, not even as threats, but as potential rivals. So the United States and the EU supported crazy Polish nationalists against Russia in the 90s and in the 2000s.
Yep.
Now the EU is having a problem with these nationalists running Poland.
Right.
But for 20, 25 years, basically, there was no talk in the EU about some Polish parties being too nationalist and being basically crudely racist in a lot of their rhetoric and in a lot of their actions too, right? The same story with China. You rightly mentioned. Suddenly, the United States discovered, you know, and the European Union discovered that there were Muslims living in China. And surprise, surprise, you know, the United States and the EU are supporting some Islamists operating in Burma, operating in China. They're shielding them from counteraction by the government forces in China. Why? Not because the United States and Europe are so enraptured about Islamists, you know. Basically, they're future ideological enemies. But these Islamists are needed to subvert China, to topple China. So everything will be forgiven to them in the next few years. And this is the most obnoxious about, you know, this is the most obnoxious element of ultra-liberalism. It is capable of cooperating with extreme right and with extreme left, you know. The usual populist talk that you hear and that is supported by the EU and by the US, like, you know, the crazy accusations against Yanukovych during the Maidan revolution.
Right.
He is rolling in dough, you know. He stole all of our money. His son is a businessman. That means he's a criminal. Basically, all of these accusations were untrue. You know, the EU court had to oblige the Ukrainian government and some of the European structures to apologize to Yanukovych's prime minister, Nikolai Azarov, because they didn't find any of his assets in Europe. And you know, during the Maidan revolution, they referred to Azarov's millions abroad as if it was a fact. So it was not a fact, it was a lie. But the ultra-liberals see how they operate. They ally themselves to Polish and Ukrainian nationalists against Russia. They ally themselves to Croatian ultra-nationalists against Serbia. They ally themselves to Islamists against China. They ally themselves to extreme left, you know, kind of loony left insurgents in the places like Egypt or Ukraine or some of the Russian Central Asian republics, you know, former parts of the Russian Empire.
Right.
This is all allowed as soon as it serves their main goal to remove from the stage the last big states that can resist ultra-liberalism. I mean, the ultra-liberals, they don't care so much about Ecuador. If Rafael Correa in Ecuador doesn't like us, if he resists, okay, we can tolerate it for a few years. He's not going to topple the United States. We will remove him when we need, you know.
Right.
We'll just send a few army brigades or we'll organize some kind of a financial crash and he will be destroyed.
Right.
But Russia, China, India, Even the countries like Turkey and Pakistan, they're big countries. They can resist. They're not resisting now, but they can resist potentially. So they need to be destroyed. They need to be partitioned. We're going to support any crazy nationalists, any violent minorities inside them, not because we like these minorities. We don't give a shit about the minorities, actually. We want to make these states weaker. This is the point.
And I guess we've got about 4.5 minutes left. The thing that struck me about this, on exactly that point, is that we're entering a period, or I guess we're actually well into it now. It's just that it hasn't been swung, at least publicly yet, as a weapon. This suggestion that I made, sort of tongue-in-cheek, is actually a quite plausible thing. If you think about the way the stock markets in Europe and Asia and the U.S. shook the other day on the information about iPhones, what it might mean if China turned around and said, we are going to prohibit any of our manufacturers, distributors, customers, etc., and any that do any business with us anywhere in the world from doing business with Amazon as a consequence of, you know, the Washington Post propagandizing against China. Imagine the impact. I mean, that is a huge potential soft. I wouldn't even call it soft power. It's about as soft as a baseball bat. That suddenly China actually has weapons like this available to it. And with a strategic partnership between Russia and China, and of course with a China that can land a spacecraft on the far side of the moon and have communications established with it with an orbital satellite, you can't take a military approach to China and say, back down or we're going to blow you up, without risking that old mutually assured destruction scenario. So this is kind of uncharted territory, isn't it?
Well, true, but I think a lot will depend on the consciousness of the Russian and Chinese elite. Will they finally abandon the hopes of appeasing the ultra-liberals? Will they finally understand that their problems are not about two or three bad officials in the White House? Their problems are not about Mike Pompeo being replaced by someone like Tillerson. Okay, we had Tillerson in the White House. You know, Tillerson was a rich businessman. He traveled to Russia. He made a lot of money here. So a lot of people in our elite said, oh, just, you know, fine, you know, it's excellent news. The problem is resolved. We've removed the bad guy. We've put the good guy in charge. Okay, not we, but American voters.
Right.
And then when Tillerson was in charge, he didn't behave much better than John Kerry or, you know, all the others. Our elite, the Russian elite and the Chinese elite, they need to understand that they're in the same boat with their people.
Right.
And they're in the same boat with the honest people in the United States. They're facing an aggressive, dangerous ideology that wants to destroy them. And this ideology will not accept compromises. Sure. Okay, Mr. Trump personally may accept compromises. I'm reading the news right now. There is so-called trading negotiation between the United States and China, and Trump is already trumpeting success, saying that the results are very good, very good. So, okay, I mean, obviously, China is going to make another concession, and the Chinese elite will think that they bought themselves 20 years of peace. No, they didn't, because you cannot bribe an ideology. You cannot appease an ideology. Right. The ideology of ultra-liberalism is not about getting as much money as possible into the United States or the European Union. It's about remaking the world, and you can't appease it. You can't bribe it.
Right. All right, we have to stop here. Dmitry, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It was also a pleasure talking to you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.